Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday, and we'll check in with Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government, about the latest news from Monticello, including the Sullivan County Health and Human Services Department partnering with BOCES, Sullivan 180, SALT, and others to address the growing youth vaping problem. SALT's conducting compassionate compliance checks at local businesses, and others are developing a plan to make use of funds to come from a national lawsuit settlement. We'll find out that and more. Farm Fest, Hilly Acres Farm, is holding its annual free Farm Fest, bringing folks together to meet some animals and celebrate local agriculture this weekend. Farm and Country's Rosie Starr went down to the farm for a preview. Plus, the Model Train Show and Sale makes its annual stop in Hawley. It's all coming up. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. What was Hurricane Helene is now a tropical storm taking a deadly and destructive path across the southeastern U.S. It made landfall on Florida's Gulf Coast last night. At least three deaths are blamed on the storm. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports from Tallahassee. It's causing flash flooding in Georgia and the Carolinas today and has left millions without power.
Hurricane Helene made landfall in Florida's Big Bend region Thursday night, with winds reaching 140 miles an hour, a Category 4 hurricane. It sent record storm surges into coastal towns like Steinhatchee and Cedar Key, washing away homes. Governor Ron DeSantis says emergency crews are deploying now.
The reality is, a storm of this magnitude, you know, it leaves a lot of damage in its wake.
Helene ripped inland with destructive winds, tornadoes, and torrential rains, prompting water rescues in the Atlanta area and parts of the Carolinas. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Tallahassee.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is speaking to the UN General Assembly. He delayed his speech from earlier this week as Israel widened its attacks on Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. The U.S. and allies had proposed a three-week ceasefire there, but earlier, Israeli officials rejected the plan. NPR's Michelle Kellerman says the U.S. is associating a halt to fighting in Lebanon with a halt to fighting in Gaza between Israel and Hamas.
The U.S. argument all along to Israel has been that if you reach a deal with Hamas in Gaza, then Hezbollah will stop firing rockets. But the Israeli officials that I talked to just don't really buy that.
NPR's Michelle Kellerman reporting. However, Israel says now that it shares the aims of the U.S. ceasefire proposal in Lebanon. Oscar-winning actress Dame Maggie Smith has died. Maggie Smith was beloved for iconic roles such as Professor Minerva McGonagall in the Harry Potter series. She also portrayed Lady Violet Crawley in the adored series Downton Abbey on PBS. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported fairly benign inflation last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrials rose about 190 points.
The Commerce Department's inflation yardstick, which is closely watched by the Federal Reserve, shows August prices were up just 2.2% from a year ago. That's a smaller annual increase than the month before, and shows inflation continues to ease towards the central bank's target of 2%. Personal spending continued to climb last month. People spent less money on goods in August, but more money on services than the month before. Wages and salaries rose last month by a healthy 0.5%. Asian stocks were mostly higher overnight. Japan's Nikkei average rose more than 2% as the country's ruling party tapped a former defense minister to take over as prime minister next week. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR. New York City Mayor Eric Adams has arrived at the federal courthouse in New York. He is facing five federal criminal charges of corruption. Adams has declared that he is innocent and is seeking a speedy trial. The United Nations has called for an immediate end to the civil war in Sudan, urging member states to help with a humanitarian response. Each day, hundreds of people, many of them women, are leaving Sudan and crossing into Chad, according to the UN's refugee agency. And as NPR's Fatma Tanis reports, they describe violence and atrocities committed against civilians.
Nearly everyone who crosses into the Chadian town of Adre from Sudan is a woman who has traveled alone with her children. They're fleeing the brutal civil war between the Sudanese army and the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. They spoke about the absolute lack of food in Western Sudan. They also gave disturbing accounts of sexual assault. With barely any belongings after being robbed on the way, very few women said they knew where their husbands or sons, brothers, and fathers were. Most said their male family members had been killed, prevented from leaving, or are simply missing. Witnesses told NPR that the RSF are conducting ethnic cleansing against certain tribes in Darfur. Fatma Tanis, NPR News.
The Japanese ruling party has chosen its next party leader, its former defense minister, Shigeru Ishiba. The Japanese parliament will vote on him next Tuesday and is expected to name Ishiba the country's next prime minister. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Progressive Insurance, with its Name Your Price tool, a way to see coverage options based on a driver's budget. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, we check in with Dan Hoos, the communications director from Sullivan County Government, for the latest from Monticello. Good morning, Mr. Dan Hoost.
Good morning, Mr. Tim Bruno.
You know it's Friday when you hear Dan Hoost on the air.
I hope that's a good thing.
I think it is. It's good. People like set their clock to it.
Oh, great.
So there was not a legislature meeting yesterday.
No.
It was scheduled that way. It wasn't because of any other reason. But still some news coming out of the government center. The Health and Human Services Department are partnering with BOCES, Sullivan 180, SALT, and others to address the vaping problem, and there's some national funding coming our way as well. Let's tell us a little bit
yes,
about that.
Yes, I'm not exactly sure how much, but I know it's going to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars at the very least that we're going to be getting, and we want to, of course, put that right towards educating our youth about the dangers of vaping. Vaping is seen so often as some safer or more beneficial alternative to smoking. It isn't. It has many of the same risks, both short-term and long-term. It is addictive. There is nicotine involved. Unfortunately, it is currently the sexier nicotine drug delivery item of choice over cigarettes. Cigarettes are seen as old school. I never thought I'd say that. This is what's seen as the hip way to do it. And, of course, just like people with cigarettes, many folks got introduced or get introduced to this in their teenage years because they wanted to be cool or fit in or had some sort of peer pressure. We need to be there to counter that at a county level, at a local level, at a school level. And so that's what this funding is going to be used towards. We are part of SALT, which is Sullivan Allies Leading Together. That's a group of local agencies that work on issues just like this. They're conducting compassionate compliance checks at local businesses.
What does that mean?
Which is to make sure that they're in compliance with the state rules and regulations regarding marketing and sales of these kinds of products. And of course, not doing it to people who are underage, because that's where this issue is really unfortunately growing. And we do it in a compassionate way. It's not like law enforcement coming in and handing you a ticket or telling you got to show up in court. This is just, can we have a conversation? Can we talk about this? Just need you to understand.
Advertisements for e-cigarettes and other vape products intended to be used for the consumption of nicotine are prohibited from display in storefronts, exterior windows, and doors of stores within 1,500 feet of a school. That is a New York law. Mm-hmm. Also, NPR reporting that nearly 1.63 million or 6% of high school and middle school students reported using e-cigarettes in 2024. Yep. That's down a little bit from the previous year, but still the USDA says long-term effects of vaping are not understood, and that for teens, nicotine-related changes in the brain may affect attention, learning, and memory. Mm-hmm. So a concern about the, reliance on vaping as an alternative to cigarettes, folks putting some
some funds against it. You mentioned that these funds are from a national settlement. It's a $1.7 billion legal settlement against e-cigarette manufacturer Juul Labs. Are there any ideas about what kinds of things could be done with the settlement money to combat the issue?
It's educational efforts. It's really hitting our schools, our youth organizations, doing signage, doing advertising where the kids are in their digital realm, and also just going to class. I remember being in class and having somebody come and present about cigarettes. And I was in elementary school, and it opened my eyes to it. You said that statistic, I said 6% have tried, but think about how many have actually been exposed to an offer to try an e-cigarette or to vape. I bet it's many, many more than that. I bet the majority of young people have had that opportunity. We need to educate them. We need to have them ready to say, no, I'm not interested, and know how to cope with the fact that they may be going against peer pressure, or they may be challenged as, well, what do you think's wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with it. So that's the point, is to educate them so they know what they're talking about and know that it's okay to say no to this.
And the interesting thing about e-cigarettes is that it plays on the marketing of it plays on a younger person's idea of something tech related or flavored. The American Lung Association says that kids might try this. They wouldn't touch a cigarette because that's what their parents or grandparents did. But because this is seen as tech friendly and there's a flavor to it and it's being marketed to them, they might want to go ahead and try it.
Right. And we need to stand in the gap, that knowledge gap, and say, no, this is actually what's really going on in your body if you're going to be inhaling this. It's not as harmless as your friends may be telling you it is.
A little more detail on that legal settlement. In 2022, Juul settled some 5,000 lawsuits from states, counties, and school districts that allege that the e-cigarette maker used deceptive marketing aimed at teens and neglected to prevent underage sales of its products. And since then, some additional suits have been settled. Money from those settlements has been used by schools in some areas like Spokane, Washington, Orlando, Florida, to install vape detectors in schools. Has that idea come up at all?
I don't think we're going in that direction. I think it's going to be sort of like with SALT does, this compassionate compliance, not a punitive or enforce. Obviously, each school can do what they want to do with that if they want to do that. But from our perspective at the county level, it's about education, persuasion, coming alongside the kids and saying, hey, we're here for you and we want you to understand. We respect your intelligence. We want you to understand what it is that you're dealing with. Because like I said, I remember in elementary school, I don't know how much intelligence I had at elementary school, but what little I had was respected and it made an impact on me. And that message was reinforced as I got older and I stayed away from cigarettes. I had it once when I was 8, tried one once, coughed my lung up, couldn't believe anybody would find this interesting or useful. And that message was reemphasized everywhere I went, that this causes cancer, that this is bad for you, it's going to prematurely age you. And those messages resonated.
My grandfather was a heavy smoker and died of cancer. When I was about that age, around 8 or so, I'm like, I want to try that.
Right.
And he gave it to me and I was like, okay. And coughed and the same thing. I'm like, why would anybody do this?
Right.
What is wrong with you people? Okay. Let's move on. The county legislature passed a resolution to fund a quick response team at Fallsburg Police Department. What's the quick response team?
This is something we also have at the Liberty Police Department. It's hand in hand with our Hope Not Handcuffs, which is volunteers, but this is through the police agency itself. A quick response team, the basic definition is it's a community-based group that provides services to people who have experienced an overdose in their families. They work to prevent future overdoses by connecting people quickly, right then and there, when there's been an overdose situation, to evidence-based treatment and recovery services, providing overdose prevention tools like naloxone and fentanyl test strips, linking people to social services. That's where we really come in for housing, food, and employment support, trying to get rid of the barriers to treatment, and training community members to refer people for assistance. Our Liberty Police Department has been hugely successful in this. Fallsburg wants to do it too. we couldn't do it without our law enforcement partners. And what a wonderful example that they're setting. You know, the police are too often seen as just enforcers taking sort of a punitive approach. They're just as interested in prevention and treatment as anybody else is. They live in our communities. They are members of our towns and villages, and they understand how, probably better than a lot of people, how difficult it is for people who are addicted to certain substances to rise above that addiction. It's in some respects, a lifelong process. But we want to be there for them when they're dealing, whether it's with the police or the healthcare system, or just with their own families, and say, we can help you get help very quickly. And the county is willing to put its money where its mouth is on this.
And that money is $15,000 to fund the quick response team at Fallsburg Police Department. The resolution that passed also included a $5,000 stipend for a senior budget analyst to do a drug task force accounting, mm-hmm. and then another $32,000 for a renewed subscription to technology tools for narcotics investigations. What are some of those technology tools?
Well, these tools allow us to investigate how narcotics are getting into our community, because part of the prevention is to stop the flow of drugs into the community, which of course is an ongoing challenge, and I'm not going to be Pollyannish and say we could fully bring a halt to that. But these tools allow us to better surveil the drug network that is coming in. The district attorney just announced this week a conviction of a longtime drug dealer who was dealing fentanyl. And fentanyl is coming in all sorts of different drugs now, things even in marijuana it can be found, and it can be easily deadly. So this is something that we need to attack with all our ability on all fronts, and that narcotics investigation part of it is a key aspect as well.
Yeah, the DA announced a 9-year sentence for a drug dealer who mm-hmm. was trafficking in fentanyl.
Yes.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dan Hoost. He is the communications director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday with an update from the Government Center in Monticello. The legislature also recently approved an office, the New York State Office of Temporary Disability Assistance, for a fully funded, state-funded family service case manager position. So why is that important? What will that position, that person do?
Well, family services, this is a key aspect of what we offer at our Department of Social Services over in Liberty. This person will be focused exclusively, which we haven't been able to focus exclusively on any of this before, on helping homeless families transition from emergency housing into permanent homes. We have over 300 homeless that we know of in Sullivan County. Could be higher than that. Just a few years ago, it was around 100 or less. So it is a growing problem. It's not unique to Sullivan County, but we have to focus, of course, on solving it in Sullivan County as much as possible. So it's really great that we're getting this funding so that this person can make this their full-time focus, not have to deal with other cases that may not involve homeless families. The funding plan will also allow our Department of Social Services to expand our existing case management services provided by other United Sullivan partners, because I've talked about that here before. United Sullivan, similar to SALT, Sullivan Allies Leading Together, like Action Towards Independence and Honor. So it's money that we're not just throwing at a problem. We're putting it into specific personnel who are going to be dedicated, if they aren't already dedicated in some of our partner agencies, to getting families in crisis the help that they need. In this case, crisis of shelter. Because can you imagine not only yourself, but your entire family living out on the street, having to stay in a tent and under trees someplace in one of our communities? This happens. This happens every day in Sullivan County, and we have to be doing something about it.
This is a new position?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't exist before?
Well, we have positions like family services case manager, but what will be unique to this is that it will be focused exclusively on homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break, and when we come back, more with Dan Hoost, the communications director from Sullivan County Government. We'll come back with more about the Clean Slate Act. This is Radio Chatskill.
Music from a musician's perspective. I'm Kathy Geary, and on Now and Then, we explore the artistry of the singer-songwriter. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This week on Travels with Triggs, I'm going to be talking to Leslie Lefranc, who, after a 35-year career as a graphic designer, moved to the Catskills and started harvesting flowers. It's an inspiring story of embracing your goals and making your life and flowers grow on Travels with Triggs.
Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're joined today by Dan Hoost, Sullivan County's communications director. And he's I'm smiling because I stumbled over what I was going to say. We are joined by – did that make sense? We are joined by Dan Hoost. Yes, that makes sense.
Were you going to call me Greg Triggs?
You know, the jingle throws me.
I'd take that as a compliment.
I want to sing the jingle, so I'm trying to be serious here. But where is he going to go? Who is he going to talk to next? We're talking to Dan Hoost. He is the communications director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. The Clean Slate Act is becoming effective in November 23rd, sealing certain nonviolent criminal records and allowing individuals to seek employment, housing, and educational opportunities so they can improve their lives. So let's talk a little bit about the Clean Slate Act.
Yes, what it is going to be required of all the employers in New York State, where there are certain nonviolent crimes that you can't take into account in hiring decisions. Or housing or educational decisions. This is something that has been very carefully thought through. I've seen the legislation on it because, of course, the first thing you think of is, you know, my family, my children. I don't want them exposed to people who are going to be at risk of committing offenses against them. But the legislation, as I said, has been very carefully crafted. Records of individuals with eligible misdemeanor convictions will be sealed after 3 years, and those with certain felony convictions after 8 years following their release from incarceration. My mom was a volunteer in the state prison for many years. I got to know many of the inmates with whom she worked. She taught piano lessons. She often was alone with these male prisoners in rooms, and she never had an issue in the prison. It was something that, by and large, these folks were grateful that there were volunteers in there working on their rehabilitation. They were committed to their rehabilitation. And in the prison she worked in, these were all felony convicts. This was the maximum Sullivan Correctional Facility that'll be closing. And I'm not saying that everyone is good and everyone should get out. What I'm saying is the system, though, is geared towards rehabilitating our inmates. But how can we continue their rehabilitation when they're out of prison if we're not going to allow them to work, to live, to get an education, that we're going to basically imprison them outside of the prison walls as well? And of course, there are folks, if you've committed some sort of sexual assault, a rape or child abuse or something of that nature, yes, there are things that I don't think you're ever going to be able to be trusted with again. But if it's something where, like, it was burglary when you were a teenager and now you're in your 50s and you've been in the prison system that whole time, are we going to continue to make you pay for what happened those decades ago? And so that's what this is designed to do, is to give people, as it says, a clean slate to allow them to reintegrate into society, which, in my experience, the majority of them do want to do. They don't want to be repeat offenders. They don't want to return to prison. Sometimes, though, some of them do, because being on the outside of those prison walls is tougher.
I mean, the state law does want to give New Yorkers a second chance, but there's a lot of misinformation being spread out there. And you mentioned some of it. One of them is, you know, children will be in danger because schools and daycares won't know if they're hiring people with criminal records.
Yeah, No, our human resources folks have looked at this, and they tell me this is something that is going to be a benefit to not only these rehabilitated criminals, if you will, but also to society in general. And let's face it, many of these people, the crimes they committed back when they committed them, there was no, warning that that was going to happen. Life has, there are dangers in life as it is, but we're making these people pay unfairly for crimes that they committed decades and decades and decades ago. It's time to give them a clean slate. If you can't tell, I'm personally in favor of this because, like I said, my mother's volunteered in the prison system, and many of the folks she volunteered with are now out and upstanding citizens of their community. Let's give them that chance.
Yeah, there are nuances to this and details at nyassembly.gov/clean slate. There's a list of myths and facts. One of the other myths is that we'll completely erase criminal records. That is not true.
No.
Only allows for the sealing of records after a period of time, not expungement. They will seal records of dangerous people like murderers. Some types of crime like murder are never eligible for sealing
they will
under
not
clean
be.
Slate.
No.
So again, get the facts and the figures here. What that actually does, newyorkassembly.gov/clean slate. Going on in the county government, your park survey is continuing.
Yes, we have a park survey. It's available on our website. If you're not online or don't want to do it digitally, just give a call to our parks office. That's 845-807-0287, 807-0287. But it's easy to do right online. We are looking for information about our park system. We have probably more parks than people realize, more locations in Sullivan County. And so it's a great way just to learn about what we offer as well and let us know whether you've heard about it or not. That's one of the things I'm very interested in. The survey is open, though, only until this Monday, September 30th. And input from it's going to be incorporated into Sullivan County Parks' master plan. So this is important for us to know what the public likes, what they don't like, what they want to see, what isn't available, or what they'd like to see in our parks, because we have a lot going on. We even have, this isn't part of the survey, but I'll just drop this out there. We have a new park that we're working on putting into the system in Calicoon, our Calicoon Riverside Park, which hopefully in another year or two will be ready and open to the public. For right now, these are for our parks like Fort Delaware Museum of Colonial History in Narrowsburg, the Livingston Manor Covered Bridge, the Stone Arch Historical Bridge Park in Canoosa Lake, the D&H Linear Park in Wurtsboro, which is an underutilized gem, our Minisink Battleground Park. Even I think there's questions about Lake Superior State Park because we don't own that, but we operate that on behalf of the state.
Last week, we talked about how Sullivan County was designated free of financial stress, according to the New York State Comptroller's Office, with the county's finances continuing to be in the best shape since that reporting began. How does this perfect score, congratulations, influence budgeting, and what's the next steps there?
Well, one of the things that it helps with is we got this perfect score of zero. I always love saying that. It's like zero. That does not sound perfect. That sounds worse. But yes, we got a perfect score of zero for zero stress. It means, for example, that we have a rainy day surplus. It's called our fund balance in the budget. We've got tens of millions of dollars in that came from sales tax and room tax revenues that we've been collecting at historic highs over the past few years. So, if we have issues coming up, for example, in the upcoming budget, there could be things coming down from the state or other issues that we need to plan for. We have money that we can draw from that fund balance, rather than taking it from property taxpayers via a tax increase. Now, I'm not saying there isn't going to be a tax increase for the budget. I expect that we probably will have one. Hopefully it's under the tax cap, but we'll know probably next month or early November when the county manager presents his tentative budget to the legislature, which then they have until December to review it, make any changes they want, and then adopt it in December. But that fiscal stress score means that we're going into this budget planning season in the best possible fiscal position in a way that will hopefully impact taxpayers as little as possible. I would love to say that we could head towards a tax decrease, but I don't know that that's going to be the case. I think it would be irresponsible for anyone to expect that at this point. But I will say that we're not looking at something that would be a catastrophic tax increase for taxpayers.
Let's talk about, I'm going to ask you about timing. We're knocking on the door of October here, and you mentioned that the county manager will present the budget in November.
Might be earlier.
Yep. So, you know, within a few weeks, and then approval by December for implementation in fiscal 2025, January 1st.
I believe it's December 20th or 21st.
So the timeline's sort of, you know, it's compressed here a little bit. If you mentioned the state maybe coming down with anything. Do you expect, is there like a cutoff when they can give you things, or does it just show up?
No, it can show up whenever it shows up. All the counties will tell you they always have to budget in a sort of a buffer, a contingency budget, because the state, they don't pass their budget until April in a good year. It can sometimes go later than that. So I never quite understood why those budget processes aren't in sync with one another, but that's way above my pay grade.
Is there anything that the legislature is anticipating that might come down that hasn't yet, or anything that they're sort of like, we should plan for this because we're waiting?
Nothing that I've heard of late yet, but I'm sure when the budget gets presented in another month or so, there's going to be a presentation that will include that information. So stay tuned. I will be back with information about that. As to what needs to be planned for, because I know the county manager and our finance team have been having quite a few meetings over the past few weeks trying to hammer out this budget. Obviously, I'm not in on all of those meetings because I'm not a finance person. You do not want to throw numbers in front of me and tell me make sense. But I know that they have had a lot of issues they need to juggle. In addition, the cost of items, goods and services continues to go up. Salaries will continue to be a huge player in any upcoming budget. But also on top of that, taxpayers are already incredibly burdened. My own mother saw her school taxes this year go up by $1,000. And you can be sure I told the county manager about that, because it's like, even though the county tax bill is really one of the smallest, if not the smallest, of your property tax bills, it still is a major player. And we need to be responsible to the people that we serve, that we give them the services that they deserve and require, but we don't do it in a way that, to put it simply, makes them homeless.
I believe those taxes are due on Monday, September 30th, with the full payment without the installment plan. Sitting on my desk. don't want to face it. Okay, let's talk about county clerk's office. They were closed. There was some renovation going on. Everything's done?
Yeah. Last week they were closed for about a day and a half, and the work continued into the weekend, and then early this week, actually, work continued as well, putting in some final pieces of trim. I've been joking with them that we should put in the Guinness World Records for longest countertop. We have a desk that serves the public, and it was always fairly long, but now it's even longer. It just, because we knocked out a wall and sort of opened up the office, it feels like it just stretches on into infinity. But we have room for all sorts of people to help the public. And even though it's open in sort of a more private way because you're more spaced out, and yet also it feels more open and accommodating because you can see all the different folks that we have working in there, because we do everything from passports to pistol permits to filing of deeds and records, notarization. And this renovation, which I can't tell you the last time that office was renovated. We think it actually might have been original to when the building opened 50 years ago. But this renovation was certainly long overdue and now positions the county clerk's office to even better serve the public. And let's face it, short of maybe DMV, our county clerk's office is the busiest public facing office in the county.
You know, it could become an attraction.
Hey, if you just want to go in and see, it's open to the public. You're welcome to come on in.
Take a selfie. And
take a look. Take a selfie if you want. Yes, we're okay with that.
World's longest government counter.
I don't know if the Guinness World Records book has that, but I joked about it.
The Office for the Aging honoring their RSVP volunteers. That's always such a nice event.
Oh, my goodness. That was wonderful. It's very uplifting. We have over 130 active volunteers in our retired senior volunteer program, RSVP, which we do through the Federal AmeriCares program. And what that program allows is people age 55 and over to be reimbursed for travel expenses, also to be covered by insurance when they help volunteer at a variety of different agencies. The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, whose board I chair, we have some RSVP volunteers over there. But you can help out on all sorts of different things. It really is tailored to what you're interested in doing. You can drive people to appointments. You could help out at our nutrition centers. You can be a library volunteer. There are all sorts of different opportunities. Just in the month of August, these 130-plus volunteers conducted, I think it was almost 1,400 hours worth of volunteer services throughout Sullivan County, which equates to what our Office for the Aging tells me is about $46,000, $47,000 of work that was done absolutely free to benefit the community. These are wonderful people doing wonderful things. And if you're interested in being a part of it, give a call to our Office for the Aging, or better yet, stop into the Government Center Office for the Aging so you can have an in-person chat with some of the fine people that would be overseeing the work you do. Because part of it is just the camaraderie, the feeling of being a team that is doing really important, wonderful work.
And is the legislature in session next Thursday? No. Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah. So the next series of legislative meetings will be, instead of the 3rd, they'll be on Thursday the 10th is when they start. And of course, you can watch live, or you can come in person, or you can do what hundreds of people do, which is watch it after the fact, because I still love this aspect of it. You don't have to watch the whole video if you don't want to. You can look at the agenda and say, oh, I want to see something about this agenda item. Click on that item, and it takes you right to that part of the conversation on the video.
You know, if you went in person, you can make it a twofer. You could go to the legislature meeting and then go see that long countertop.
Yeah, that's
true.
Bring
the family.
You could. Yeah. Boy, if people actually take us up on that, I'm going to have something fun to talk about next Friday.
Dan Hoost is the communications director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday with an update from the Government Center in Monticello. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
You too.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, down on the farm, it's Hilly Acres Family Farm Fest. Rosie Starr will have a preview next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hello, I'm Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. You know, jazz is a great improvised art form that started in America, spread around the world, and is still going strong. That's why every Saturday afternoon I bring you the best in current jazz. It's the newest, most interesting music you can hear anywhere. Join me for Living Jazz, noon to 2 Saturday, here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Hilly Acres Farm in Jeffersonville is holding its annual free farm fest, bringing folks together to visit the farm. Farm and Country's Rosie Starr went down to the farm for a preview.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Up in the hills in Jeffersonville, and I'm actually at Hilly Acres Farm because there's this annual special event is about to take place on the 28th of September. And I'm standing here now with Tanya Hahn, but I let her introduce herself because she's going to tell you all about this cherished annual event.
Well, I'm Tanya Hahn. We are having our annual, seems to be an event that everybody asks for now every year. We've been doing this, I believe this will be either the 9th or the 10th year that we've done this. We gather up some local vendors that we deal with or work with at some of the local farmers markets. They come along and they sell their goods people like Bill and Barb from Oak Works. He makes like the most beautiful wooden spoons and things of that nature. Amanda from Woodside. She makes the best jams. Her and her husband have been coming again since the beginning. We've got 4-H groups coming. Sullivan West FFA will be there. Forthright will be coming. So they'll have all their really great, great drinks to relax with for the afternoon. We'll have music. Joanne Dutcher will be singing along for the afternoon, and we'll have some just nice, relaxing times. We can go into the barns. You can go for a hayride. The kids can decorate pumpkins. We're going to have Ryan Irwin will be there. Now it's Ryan Schwartz. She'll be there with her ice cream. We'll have all kinds of different foods. We'll be serving up some smoked beef and some sausage and peppers. So we'll have some easy warming foods. It's a rain or shine event. So if it's raining, bring your boots and your raincoat, because farming does not stop just because the weather is not conducive to perfect weather. There's just a ton of things to do that day. There'll be, like I said, the pigs, piglets, cows, calves, sheep, Reuben, our donkey, just so much stuff that the kids can see. The kids will be able to decorate pumpkins. Anderson's will be there as well. They'll have maple syrup. There's a bunch of other vendors that I know I'm missing. We'll probably have close to 20 vendors that'll be there. A couple new vendors. Morning Lover is one of our newer ones. She's at the Berryville Market. You know, a lot of these folks give up their markets to spend the day with us. You know, it's a time for us to open it up to our customers to come see what we have, see what farming is about. It's not always the glamour that we all think it might be. You know, you don your muck boots and you're a farmer, but that's not necessarily realistic. When it's bitter cold, we're out in the middle of it. When it's beastly hot, we're out in the middle of it. There's really no holiday because we need to take care of our animals 24/7. We're on duty 24/7.
Yes, you are. And how much of an impact on your daily farming life and your family is this? It's such a cherished event. I can see why people want to come. When I'm there, I always say it's the closest that you can almost reach heaven. You can touch the sky. Mm-hmm. And it is a family educational event. It's just so much fun. But talk more about the impact on you.
Like I said, it's 24/7. Very rarely do we all just get to go away for a couple of days. You always have to strategically plan things and have some folks in place that can back you up so that we can go to a wedding or we can go to a day event of some sort. Many times we've planned Father's Day dinners or dinners out, made reservations, and cow's having a calf. She's struggling. We got to stay and help. You just can't just say, well, sorry, we'll be back after dinner. We'll help you out. We'll lose that calf, or both the calf and the cow. Once you're committed to this, you are committed. We are responsible for the animal's well-being. And if we're responsible for their well-being, we need to make sure that they're happy, healthy, they're comfortable, that they're not ill in any way. If they look like something's not right, we try to address it right away, see what's going on. You know, I have a saying, our animals are cool in the summer and warm in the winter. That's very important that they have comfort because they have a purpose. We all have a purpose. They have a purpose. And so it's really our responsibility to take care of them.
I saw this event posted on the Upper Delaware Community Network, and there was a reply about how you raise your animals with care. There was a response that people take note of that.
Yeah. We have a saying, and we believe firmly in it. If you're going to be a farm animal, you want to be on our farm. Because, again, as long as they're comfortable, if it's pouring rain and it's cold, they've got a place to walk in and get out of the weather. If it's hot and it's beastly hot, they have some cool water and they have a place to get out of the sun. Very simple things, just like us. I mean, you know, when we're hot, we want to go into the air conditioning. You know, a lot of times people are like, oh, your animal should be outside all the time. Well, all the time is not always great for them. And there's predators, you know, with, say, for instance, with poultry. It's not easy just to put your chickens out every day and then try to gather them up. We have coyotes, we have fox, you know, we have fishers, we have all kinds of things that would make great dinner for those guys. Our responsibility is to keep them safe. So we have them cage free, open air, light, fresh air coming in, nice cool water. Who wouldn't want to live like that, right? But it's such a simple concept. This is how it should be. To me, it's just the natural way of things should be, the way we should be treating each other.
With respect.
With respect. That's all we do, is we treat them with respect. They talk back to us. You know, if they're hungry, they tell us.
Are these beautiful little cows that are talking right now, are they hungry?
No, they're wondering where mom went. They're coming out to go have their afternoon munchies and get out on the pasture, and they're looking for mom. Mom has walked out, and now they're going, okay, where's everybody going? As you can see, they're herd animals, so they're going to follow each other.
Let's get back to the event. I have a memory of the stand that sells all those pumpkins.
Mm-hmm. That's Anderson's maple syrup, so she'll be there. Patty will be there, or maybe it'll be Megan or Pete. They'll be there with pumpkins and maple syrup. There'll be all kinds of different vendors there selling jams. We'll have ice cream. I think there might even be a fella there that's going to have kettle corn, Forthright with their cider. County Road Bakery will be there with some gluten-free yummies. So if gluten's an issue, she'll take right good care of you. Yeah, we'll have Mullally's Tractor Sales will be on hand. They're going to have their, I call them buggies, but they're the larger side-by-side. We'll be buzzing people up and down, and they'll be there with their equipment. And Ryan and Jamie Lowe, they just opened in Jeffersonville as well, selling a lot of equipment. So they'll be there. So folks want to need a new lawnmower, they need a new piece of equipment, Ryan and Jamie will be there on hand to display their stuff, as will, like I said, Mullally Tractor Sales. And we appreciate the support from all the vendors that are on hand, because they have their own following too, that so people get to come and see what other things they're doing. So it'll be pretty diverse. It'll be a lot of different things going on. Of course, the hayride's always a hit. I think the kids' favorite thing to do, they decorate their pumpkins and then they jump on the hayride and they go for a ride.
What I have appreciated about the event over the years is the spacing. There's so much space to move around, and idyllically, so relaxing to just go from one little section to another, right. The booths, the buildings. It's not crowded. It's meandering mm-hmm. in beautiful country hillside. The kids are running around. There's space and freedom, and you always learn something. There's something new to taste. Let's refresh the memory of the time, the date, and a website to get more information.
September 28th, we did change the time. It's 11 to 4, so a little bit later in the day. Gives everybody a little bit of a chance to get out of bed and get rolling. And it also gives us a chance to get our chores done, because sometimes we're still trying to get our chores all finished up before the crowd comes in. It's at 32 Wall Road in Jeffersonville. You know, it's a rain or shine event. It's free. You can come and not buy a thing, and that's fine. Come, particularly for the kids, it's fun to watch them. And when we have, for instance, the 4-H groups, my dear friend Jean Smith and Karen Coombe will have bunnies there. And these bunnies, they do all kinds of things. And the kids just love to hang out with the bunnies. They get to pet them, they get to hold them, they get to do all kinds of things with them. The other 4-H groups that'll be there, they always have an activity for the kids. The Sullivan West FFA group, Patty McCarthy, he is phenomenal. That group has done some really cool things. They are always at our event. They'll have things going on for the kids. It gives a better appreciation for what agriculture is. The kids, they just run and they play, and usually we've got kernels of corn, dry corn, all over the yard by the time the day is out. They get to see the antique tractors that we have, and they just run and play and run and play and eat more ice cream and eat more food and then run and play and run and play until they just finally collapse and they've had enough.
And so their parents are happy too.
Yeah. And we always have the Jeffersonville Volunteer Ambulance Corps is always on standby. They've always been more than gracious, and they volunteer their time. They're a great organization. They come every year, and they sit on the corner and watch things go on. They're there if someone isn't feeling well or somebody has a bruise or gets a cut. They will be happy to take care of you.
Okay, one last question. I'd like to know, when you're walking up the driveway, up the hill, there's always a donkey with the sheep. Are the sheep and the donkey going to be there?
Absolutely. This year, Reuben will be there. He was there last year. The year before that, we had a Jackson. And unfortunately, after we figured Jackson was probably 35 or 40, and he passed away, and we have a new donkey named Reuben. Reuben doesn't hee-haw quite as well as Jackson yet, but he's working on it. But he's a sweet guy, and he will be there with the sheep. And we also, this year, I'm not sure if I'm sold on this, but we have four goats. And so the goats are a little bit of a menace, but the goats will be there.
Well, they're a menace because that's their personality, but they'll be penned up or at least corralled.
They're in with the sheep and with Reuben, so yeah, they'll be fine. They won't be nibbling on anybody's shirt tail or anything like that, so.
Oh, Tanya, this was such a treat to come up here and speak to you on the farm. Looking down at the event site, I always thought that the Helly Acres event site was high, but we're way up above it looking down. It's so beautiful, and I understand it's rich with family history up here, dating back to the early 19th century.
Yes. It's a funny story. If most people know this story, and I'm assuming that's what you're leading me into, is to tell the story of how we ended up here. So my husband's dad grew up on the farm proper on Sander Road. We call this the home farm. His uncle raised him and his siblings after both his parents had passed. And then when my parents immigrated to the United States after World War II, they took a ride up from New Jersey. And this place was for sale, and they decided to buy it. And many years later, my husband and I got together, and the saying is the only reason he married me was to get the farm back into the family. So that's the story, and our oldest absolutely adores it. This is his passion. You know, we work for him. Michael, he's the farmer. We work well together. It's very generational, even though it kind of skipped kind of, and then it came back in. But yeah, it's been in the family for many, 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 many years. One way or the other.
You have a beautiful sense of humor, and in stature, I'd say you're medium, but you're mighty. You're a mighty woman. I so much appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. I revere your knowledge, your strength, and your passion for real farm and country living. You're an ideal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us and for listening to our little story. We do our best.
Thank you to the audience for listening and for showing up at the event on September 28th to honor the effort and the beauty, the education, the sweetness of farming country life at Helly Acres. Thank you.
Thank you.
More information for Helly Acres Farm Festival is available on Facebook and their website, hillyacresfarm.com.
And thanks to Farm and Country's Rosie Starr for that report. A reminder also to tune in and listen to Farm and Country every Saturday morning at 10. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And another event this weekend, the Holly Model Train Show and Sale. It's a popular fundraiser for the Holly, Pennsylvania Fire Department, featuring new and used model trains in all scales and gauges and an operating model railroad display. Jason Dole spoke to train show organizer Bill Delling.
About 25 years ago, I started as a fundraiser for the Holly Fire Department. You know, as every fire department is, they're always looking for funds for equipment and gear and everything else. And I know there's a lot of rail fans out there and people that are interested in model railroading. And I contacted a lot of dealers, and over the years, we built it up to about usually around 80 tables, and this show will put us close to the 19,000 in attendance.
Over all the years you've been doing it?
Yes.
That's great. There's interest in trains and model trains. We've got real train history on both sides of the river in our listening area, but Pennsylvania is particular has a lot of strong train history. Do you find that plays into the folks that are coming out to this?
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of the rails have been torn up. Number one, the decline in coal in a lot of towns. Now all these what used to be railroads are rails to trails. And also New York State, you had the O&W Railroad, which I have to say I have one dealer coming. He will have a lot of O&W memorabilia, books, some videos, and other items. And O&W did play a big part over in Sullivan County, even in Pennsylvania years ago.
Can you tell me a little bit more about some of the other dealers that you got coming and what their areas of specialty might be?
Sure. We have all the popular gauges from N, HO, and O27, and it's everything from model train sets to individual freight cars, locomotives, track, books, videos, apparel, model buildings, scenery items, you know, kind of the gamut of what would be on a model railroad. Or actual railroads, too. We have dealers with calendars, books, and other things pertaining to the real railroads.
Do people set up model railroad displays as part of the show?
Yes. I have one gentleman. He brings his vintage 1950, 60 American Flyer S gauge that anyone, kids or adults, can interact with the old accessories and run the trains. There's two trains that are operable on the layout. And I also have a gentleman who is bringing his layout, which will be for sale. So that's another one that they can look at. And, you know, maybe somebody might be interested in purchasing it.
What, buying the whole layout?
Yeah, it's not that big. It's about 5 foot by 3.5 foot.
Anything else you want folks to know about the event?
Well, just the admission is $3 for an adult, under 12 free with an adult. We will have our kitchen, which serves different meal food items, and we have plenty of free parking. And we are located right behind the post office off Main Avenue, and the hours are 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
So, and that's happening this Sunday, the 29th, right?
Yes, the 29th. And yeah. We are the only train show in this area. The nearest one from us is over in the valley.
You mean like the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre Valley?
Yeah, the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area, yes. Yeah, they have a couple different, you know, hobby shops have some, and, you know. But in this area, Wayne, Pike County, Sullivan County, this is the only one that I'm aware of. And like I said, we've been going for about 25 years now.
Okay, great. Well, Bill, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about this, and I hope you get a good turnout.
Well, I hope so. So everyone's invited if you're interested in trains, model trains, real trains, and it gives the kids something to do besides being on video games for a while. They might even get interested in the hobby. Everyone's invited, and, you know, it's something different.
All right. Well, thanks again, and best of luck.
Well, thank you, and have a good day. Bye.
Jason Dole speaking to Bill Delling, the train show organizer, the Holly Model Train Show and Sales this Sunday in Holly, benefiting the Holly Fire Department. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Don't go anywhere, though. Next, it's our continuing election 2024 coverage. We'll hear from Paula Kay and Lou Ingracia Jr. debating the issues at the Catskills News Talk and Mid-Hudson News Decision 2024 debate for the New York State 100th Assembly District. That's coming right up at 11 right here on Radio Catskill, keeping you connected this election season. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week, Evie McGee Colbert comes by to talk about the family food she and her husband, Stephen Colbert, cook. And we get into the stories of food on tour with indie musicians. Celebrities, they're just like us. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, mainly cloudy, a high of 70. Cloudy and mild tonight, the low down to 59. For the weekend, more clouds than sun, it looks like, but nice temperature, 65 for the high Saturday. Sunday's high, 63. Monday, partly sunny and a high of 68. Looking ahead, there might be some rainy weather Tuesday morning through Wednesday morning.